This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Majora Carter is a pioneer in urban sustainable living. It's also been called ghetto greening. She grew up the youngest of 10 children in the South Bronx and became an activist, executive director of a group called Sustainable South Bronx. Her work has been widely hailed. Majora Carter is a MacArthur Genius Fellow, and she's probably the only person to win an award from both the Liberal Center for American Progress and a Liberty Medal from Rupert Murdoch's conservative New York Post. She runs the Majora Carter Group, and Goldman Sachs in 2012 called her one of the 100 most intriguing entrepreneurs. And she's won one of broadcasting's most prestigious awards, the Peabody, for a radio show called The Promised Land. And she's here to talk about with people in South Seattle at the Duwamish about living near a polluted Superfund site. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
I got to ask you, first of all, what was it like to grow up the youngest of 10 children?
You had to learn how to fend for yourself pretty quickly, honestly, just to be taken seriously and supported the way you wanted to be.
Sounds like it might have made you tougher to grow up in a big family like that. Yeah,
you kind of had to just know how to roll with it and be okay with the way things were and then work to make them work for you.
Tell me about your neighborhood when you were growing up. What was it like?
We were the poster child for urban blight. I saw it on the nightly news as a place that was perceived as only crime and drugs and violence, although there were definitely folks there. The years of financial disinvestment made it so that we lost a lot of property, people, businesses, and we were dealing with that.
How did you get involved in community activism? You saw these problems. Why did you get involved?
I wanted to leave the community. Again, kids like us were taught to measure success by how far we can leave a neighborhood like that. And I wanted desperately to leave. I use education to do so. I came back only because I got into graduate school at NYU and needed a cheap place to stay, which was my parents' house. But I got involved in the fight to help create a more sustainable solid waste management plan because we discovered that the city wanted to build yet another waste facility on our waterfront. And I figured there was something else that we could do to support and improve the quality of life for people there.
Why was that a big deal in your neighborhood? And I mean, lots of issues in neighborhoods, but everybody doesn't get involved in working on them. What drew you to that?
Having some education and distance and seeing that not everyone was treated the same way that poor communities of color were treated, and I wanted to be a part of the move toward working to make those communities more sustainable, and in particular the one I happen to live in. But I knew that it was the impact of it would have much farther reaching consequences that impacted not just my community, but communities all over the country.
What were the challenges of organizing a low-income community on a political activity like this with strong opponents?
Well, first, many folks that live in poor communities feel demoralized, and for good reason. I mean, they are politically vulnerable. They are targeted through institutionalized mechanisms that will dump the worst uses on there, like we saw it environmentally, educationally and things of that nature. And so I think people feel that way. So helping them see that they have the capacity to fight for themselves is really important. But then the other part was dealing with the whole institutionalized feeling that those communities could and should be forgotten about or used in any way, by the forces that are out there, whether it's regulatory agencies or some businesses or, other companies that decide that that's what they want to do. So it comes from both sides, but on both sides, you also find great amounts of power that want to see change happen. And it's up to us to use strategy to help find those people and then do something with them so that we can all get better.
Was there a signal moment in this battle over the solid waste facility that you were opposing because of the truck traffic when you thought this is really coming together?
Yeah, when we were able to help people understand that this wasn't a losing battle, that we could, if we mobilized and really helped the city and our state understand that concentrating large amounts of this type of industry in our community was going to come, not just a huge impact to our health, but to the very fabric of the city's life. Like, we were doing some very wasteful things. I mean, there were policies just around how much we were wasting. You know, we weren't recycling. We were not, you know, considering what did this mean in terms of the costs of handling waste in this way. And that was on a taxpayer burden side as well. And I think we were able to do some really wonderful work as part of a citywide alliance to help make that happen.
Now, you were not only able to overcome the people who wanted to put this in with your reasoning, but there are also people in the community that supported this project, weren't there?
There was one group who actually joined forces with the waste facility because I think on some level felt as though this was the best they can get. And we never really understood. We were unable to get a real straight answer from them, but eventually they went away.
What was the outcome of this battle?
Oh, the outcome is that we have a much more sustainable solid waste management plan in New York City that doesn't discriminate against low-income communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got a much better recycling plan, I think, out of those efforts. The New York City is going to start composting. I mean, there's a bunch of things that came out of that in ways that I think are just remarkable.
Now, one of the reasons you're here in Seattle is to talk to people down at near the Duwamish Superfund site, and the EPA is considering a $350 million cleanup plan. Some of those neighbors, as you'll learn, think it doesn't go far enough. For example, the plan doesn't ensure that fish caught in the Duwamish will ever be safe mm-hmm. for consumption. They think that's a big mistake. Is this adequate from your perspective?
I'm not so sure about this is going to be my first time seeing it, but I've been working on urban revitalization strategies for the past 15 years. So what I'm very interested in talking to the residents and to all the folks involved there about are what are their plans for seeing how they can improve the quality of life there, and then working with them to help making sure that they're equipped with all they need to make the right kind of decisions for their future. And I get the feeling that they're going to come up with some incredibly, you know, profoundly important solutions, you know, for their issues.
Let's talk a little bit more about what strategic advice you will have for them. You mentioned working across the aisle, for mm-hmm. example.
Nobody, especially, you know, sadly, in a lower income or, you know, communities that have been underserved and marginalized, we can't just make things happen on our own. By ourselves. We've got to create alliances, whether it's with businesses, whether it's with government, even with other community organizations, and you know that are often siloed, that you know, to bring us together, to work together, to figure out what it is. Doesn't mean we all have to agree on every single issue, but we do have to look for the self-interest in what our agenda is and see how that aligns with the self-interest of somebody else's agenda. Because that's how you make things happen. All of my projects, whether it was working to transform a dump and turn it into a park, or developing one of the country's first and most successful green collar job training and placement systems, to working in the real estate world right now with a strategy that does gentrification without displacement. I mean, those are the kind of things that we're working on or have worked on that will require and always have required not just staying in our own little silo of development or whatever it is, but understanding who are all the players, you know, whether it's in other industries, whether it's finance, whether it's, regulatory agencies, whether it's, other community groups. It's all about how do you align your self-interest with their own self-interest so that they're there to support and help you. And that's what strategy is.
Majora Carter is my guest. We're talking about community organizing and some of the work she's done around the country. I want to go back to where you started, the South Bronx, where there is a controversy going on right now about a plan by the online grocer Fresh Direct to relocate there. And as you're aware, some neighbors are concerned about the environmental impact. In fact, the group that you used to lead, Sustainable Bronx, as I understand it, opposes it. Mm-hmm. And your consulting group is working with Fresh Direct. And that's led to some people to say, oh, Majora Carter has abandoned her community roots. You should be working against this instead of for this. What's your response to that?
I'm an urban revitalization strategist with 15 years of experience, and my ability to look at whether it's a company, an issue, and determine over a broad range of whether or not it was going to be a useful net benefit for the community hasn't disappeared. So when I looked at that project, I saw that there were a net benefit to the local community, and also discovered that there were plenty of other groups that felt the same way. And so my ability to support a broad range of community members who were interested in the jobs, in the food access, in their the company's interest in developing a better environmental future as well, was something that I took seriously. And everyone's entitled to their opinion.
To the question of food access, fresh direct groceries are pretty expensive, aren't they? I mean, are they really going to be affordable to that low-income community?
When we did the analysis of more than 2,000 products that are currently available in the South Bronx, fresh direct was 10 to 15% cheaper than what you can find in the community.
Finally, Goldman Sachs, as I mentioned, called you one of the 100 most intriguing entrepreneurs. And Goldman Sachs is not something we would ordinarily associate with community activism. Are you at all uncomfortable with wearing that mantle,
I'm not a community activist. Okay. I'm a businesswoman.
Majora Carter, thank you so much for stopping by and speaking to us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.